Shalom, everyone. Well, let's get started because it's going to be 3-4 hours before I'm done, so I want to get everybody home at a reasonable time. So we're going to be back in the 16th chapter so I can try to finish up. I kind of left some open ends, and I want to try not to leave too much open, even though every time we up here, it's always an open end because there's so much more still to cover. But let's look at that 16th chapter. That way we can get through most, you know, the 16th chapter is a short chapter. We can get through most of that and be ready to go on a 17th chapter in the morning. That's the plan anyway. And so we're talking about this son born to Hagar, which is born of the flesh, and we're dealing with the son that's going to be born of the free woman, which is born by the promise. And we was looking at Galatians 4. And so we're going to go back to this fourth chapter of Galatians and look at that so we can sort of wrap this tied up a little bit, because when we get into 18, we're going to need it. Because 18 of a new Torah portion we're going to go into will be chapter 18 of Genesis. It automatically brings you to Galatians 3, which I think I'd recommend it reading Galatians from 1 all the way to 4, and reading 7 and 8 of Romans, and looking at this extensively, we see some powerful principles that's laid out for us. So, in Galatians, chapter 4, we're dealing with this story of what our Torah portion's on. Now, Avram, what we've seen in 16 is he listened to the voice of his wife. Now, it doesn't mean that a man shouldn't listen to the voice of his wife. But if the voice of his wife is contrary to the voice of Jehovah, he's not to listen. It's that simple. So we have a pattern. It's a pattern not set for us. Avram listened to the voice of Sarah. There's a consequence. Adam listened to the voice of Eve. There's a consequence. So we see a pattern there. And that you think that the pattern of Scripture is going to change because we're in more of a modern time, it won't change. Because it's not the fact that they listening to the voice of the wife was not the wrong. It's that the voice of the wife was contrary to what Jehovah had last said when it was pertaining to promise. What was the promise to Adam and Eve? If you don't eat from this tree, you'll live. If you eat, you shall surely die. Automatically, he should have known that something's wrong here. And because he responded wrongly, there's a consequence. So we see in Avram's case, Sarai decides that being impatient, they got a promise from a seed, but it's taking time. And we know the time frame of these different times, because from the first time that Jehovah spoke to Avram about him having a seed, not just Eliezer, but his own seed, was 10 years went by. So we see these increments in Scripture, and it's important because you can kind of follow the chronological levels of how God is dealing with Avram and see that this faith that Avram had to have is not some ordinary little faith. It took big faith for him to trust God. But understand that salvation is not, you can't claim salvation as being something that just comes through the husband. Speaking of the women tonight, women can't claim salvation through the husband. Salvation has to be something that you have to have your own faith. You have to believe God for yourself. You have to say, I'm not going to follow the flesh that I'm in. I'm going to follow what Jehovah said. Once in Sarai's case, she had to learn that on her own. So she She learned by what she suffered. And she suffered because the moment that Hagar went in there, it was like putting miracle growth on the seed. She got pregnant right away, and here she is this whole time now. So she got upset about that, but she had to learn. And so in Hebrews it says, Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed. She had to get to a spot where she received it for herself. Now, Avram didn't help the situation by listening to the voice of Sarah, and so that just began to add more and more to it. At some point, we got to decide in our life, I'm not going to let flesh dictate what I do in the day. And so how many times you got to suffer the consequence is going to be up to us. But we know why it's happening. And let's not try to paint it a picture better for ourselves. And you'll learn today when we read in Romans that Shaul said, when I try to do good, evil's present. You have to get that together. Just because you're born again and filled with the Spirit don't mean evil's not present. It's present. That frightened darkness is there even when Yehovah's making a promise with an oath. It's there. So what makes you think it won't come around you? The fact is we neglect to realize that we have an adversary that's always trying to assault us, and so we let our guard down and we get run over. We got to always be aware and always be on guard to make certain that we don't allow that to happen. And this is stuff we'll learn as we go along. You'll learn these things. It's part of your sanctification. It's nothing to do with being justified. That's a give me. Justification's a give me. Well, who gave it to us? Yeshua did when he died for us. And we're going to learn all what I just said. There's a lot more to say to that, but it's not to the next Torah portion. And so because I went to the next Torah portion, why? Because I have to. I have to go to the next Torah portion to get started or I won't be ready. It's difficult to finish the one you hadn't finished yet, because when you go through it, it's fresh on your mind. And generally, we speak what's fresh on our mind. That's why this will help our guys that have to get up here. If you're going to take a section of the Torah portion and you haven't read through the information at least 3 to 4 times before you got up here, you're probably not ready. Because you have to inundate yourself with it, and you're going to pick up one thing at one point. The next reading, you're going to pick up a different thing, and they're going to build on top of each other. And then you get up here. It don't necessarily mean you need to write it down, because you're going to wind up retaking notes that you already have. And so what you got to do is you're working on comprehending how to express it in a practical way. Remember, our job is take it off the pages of this book of antiquity. It's historical. It's old, and we got to take it from here, and we got to relay it to the people who are living right now and how they apply it to our lives. That's practical. And so at some point, we have to get to that practical understanding. And so just bear with me that I can stay kind of focused on what's at hand right now. I'm going to try my best to, because that 18th chapter of the next Torah portion is absolutely incredible. It's incredible. I think it alone is going to be, it could be near 300 slides, just that one chapter. So, there's a lot of, my point is there's a lot of information going on in that chapter, because he gets down to it in the 18th chapter. I mean, gets down to it. The reality of what he's about to do is going to be met, and they have to believe God. Crazy, it's crazy faith. This is a level of faith that blows your mind. And then you have another 13-year gap. 10 years and 13 years don't help the situation. It only makes you think, is God ever going to do what he said? But yet God turns it around and shows that he's more powerful than time. So, let's look at this. We'll start with verse 21 of Galatians 4. Say to me, you who wish to be under Torah, do you not hear the Torah? Now here's where it gets a little difficult, and folks really avoid these passages because we don't know what to say about them. But it's we gotta be able to say something about them because of the wording here. Now you gotta read it all in all of its understanding, and you have to understand that Shaul wrote more than one book, and he wrote more than one time on the subject. So we gotta look at every time he wrote on this subject, and so he's dealing with this subject. Say to me, you who wish to be under Torah, do you not hear the Torah? For it has been written that Abraham had two sons. Here we go with Galatians 16. One by a female servant, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the female servant was born according to the flesh. Everybody say flesh. Because you got to understand, when you're dealing with this subject, we're dealing with flesh and we're dealing with spirit. Flesh and spirit. Keep that in mind, especially when you have these things that's just hard to understand what Paul explains. And if we take them and twist them, it'll be to our own delusion. And we already been warned of that, so we don't want to do that. So how do we not do that? Is we have to listen to the words that were being used here. We're dealing with flesh and we're dealing with spirit. Flesh and spirit. And so sometimes Paul is not as clear when he's talking about flesh, and he don't make it clear that he switched to talk about spirit. And it's the burden is upon us to slowly look at it so we can see when he switches back and forth. It's not like there's not like a highlighter on when he's talking about flesh and he highlights that part, because he refers to the flesh as sin in Romans. That's why I had you read Romans. He refers to it as sin, and that part of Torah as sin. So the part that he's saying that we don't want to be under is the sin part of Torah. And she said, how would I even know about covetousness unless the Torah told me? I wouldn't even know about that sin, but it told me that. So, but you have to understand, under Yeshua, we've been freed from that thing that encapsulates us. It won't let you go. Until Yeshua come, it wasn't letting anybody go. We're all bound to sin. The blood of bulls and goats couldn't take the sin away. It was there forever. But we've been free from that through this covenant of promise. What covenant? The one he made to Abraham when he split the animals. Remember the cutting? He cuts the animals. And so, Sister Hillary asked a question during the Midrash, and I wasn't sure I answered it clear enough. So I had to take some time to go look at that more. And I believe between tonight and tomorrow, I'm going to answer it real clear. Very clear. Because the scripture tells us about it. And that was pertaining to this cutting the pieces and cutting. So I said it in more of a general way, right? When covenants are made, blood is shed. And blood is shed from cutting. You get blood. If you cut animals in half, you get blood. And so without the shedding of blood, we know there's no remission of sin. So somebody's got to be cut for us. Who's going to be cut for us? It's not you that gets cut. You don't get cut for your sins. That's why circumcision don't avail to anything, nor uncircumcision. See, but we missed that part when Shaul was telling us, so we kind of get lost in it. So in general, what happens is the church wraps it all in one bundle and says that the Torah is over with. But he never says that. So that's hard to say that you're going to take something that's righteous and good away when it's never been said. That's why we got to be so careful. So let's read it slow. We're going to take our time and finish up this fourth chapter of Galatians. For it has been written that Abraham had two sons, one by a female servant and another by a free woman. But he who was born of the female servant was born according to the flesh. Everybody say flesh again. And he of the free one was born through promise. Now this promise has to do with spirit. It's the spiritual element. We don't know that yet because it's promise here. But in Romans, it's spirit. And you got to understand that he describes to the Galatians one way, and then he describes, you have to understand, Galatia. Where's Galatia? Where is it? Remember, history, language, and context. Where's Galatia? Well, it's in Asia. You're talking about non-Jews. But when he's dealing with Rome, he's dealing with some of his Jewish brethren. So he words it different because they have a deep, where he meets them in the road, they had a different understanding. Does that make sense to you? So when you read, you have to take that in consideration. Don't say that Paul said something different. He didn't say anything different. He's very consistent. If we understand, when we look at who he's writing to, you'll understand what he's dealing with. When you're talking about Galatia, a place in Asia, a group of people that don't understand everything there is to deal with the Torah, he's having to explain it a different way. And so this should be important for us to understand. But he who was of the female servant was born according to the flesh. He of the free woman was through promise. This is allegorical. What does allegory mean? What it means to have an allegory? Somebody say what it means to have an allegory. So you ever seen a painting that has something hidden inside of it? That could be described, it's an allegorical painting. It's painting a picture of something, but inside the picture is a picture in a picture or something being said inside that picture. Now, it was never intended for the one inside to be the one that you see mostly. You see the other one mostly, but you're drawn into the picture, then you get the other part of the story of it. So he's telling us this is allegory. He says, don't get so wrapped up in Hagar and Sarai. I want you to get wrapped up in the story in the story. That's allegorical. Now, we're told that. We don't get to choose that ourselves. We didn't say this is allegory. We don't get to do that. So because we wouldn't have known to do that, he said it for us. Shaul said this is allegorical. And so you say, I don't even know what that means. Well, you plug it into Google and get the definition. It's easy. You can get the definition. This is not hard. It's not that we're trying to be tricked here. He's telling us, so if you're studying this and you don't understand what allegory is, you won't get none of the rest of what I'm reading. You won't get none of the rest of it. He's trying to tell you within this scene that just played out with Hagar and Sarai, in this scene, there's another story I'm telling. And he's trying to tell us that there's a spiritual side to this story that I want you to embrace. This is allegorical for these are two covenants. Everybody say two covenants. They're two covenants. Why? Because he made a promise to Ishmael and he made a promise to Abraham, and then eventually that promise to Abraham was passed on to Isaac, and Isaac was so shocked by it, he said, what have I done that deserved these blessings? Everybody remember reading that? We'll get there eventually. But he was shocked by the fact that he's because I promised them to your daddy, that's why you're getting them. And I promised to his generation and his generation forever. So the promise to Abraham is used because it's a generational forever promise. That's why Yeshua is the seed that ultimately is being dealt with, because he's the part of the promise. He's the part what Yehovah did when that burning oven and that furnace, that torch, flaming torch, went through the pieces. What did Yehovah have in his mind? He had it in mind, I'm going to send my only son, and he's going to be cut for you. He's going to shed his blood for you. Once he does that, circumcision doesn't avail no more. That's why Shaul said the Jews were trying to put circumcision on the new believers. He said, why are you doing that? Are you not seeing what Christ did? And what happens, we encapsulate that whole thing and say, see, Torah's over with. Can't encapsulate it. You got to deal with the subject that's being dealt with and not be afraid to deal with that. Learn it. Go and look at it. Familiarize yourself with it. Embrace. It's beautiful when you do that. You weep. There's moments you sit back and you weep. You can't help it. I was thinking about it this morning as I was going out, and I was praying as I was going out. And I'll tell you, I just had a weeping moment on the airboat because I started thinking about the incredibleness of God and what he established for us and the length that he went through to do it for us. It's absolutely amazing. It amazes me. And sometimes it's hard for me to carry to words how I feel on the inside. how what it's done in my life, what it means to me. I try to do the best I can, but sometimes I fail in putting good words to it. It's allegorical, for these are two covenants. One indeed from Mount Sinai, which brings forth slavery. How many see that? Now we see these words and we go, see, it's told us bad, it's bad, it's bad, bad, bad. But if you'll let me finish reading, you'll see that that's not what it's saying. Which is Hagar. She's bad. For this Hagar is Mount Sinai of Arabia and corresponds to Jerusalem, which is now is and is in slavery with her children. So we have slavery speaking of Hagar and of Jerusalem, who's in slavery with her children. So both of them in the same boat. But one's of the flesh and the other's by promise. And he's going to distinguish which one that we need to pay attention to, because it's allegory. Remember that. So what did God do? He took this situation, which was not good. But he said, let me show you how I'm going to take everything that the mistakes they made. How many thank God he can take your mistakes and turn it around for your good? He's done it many, many times. Maybe you hadn't even recognized. Sometimes you got to sit down and recognize how many times he's done that for you. He's done it many times for me. He takes our mistakes, our faults, and he turns them around and he's shaping us. He said, you see, sometimes he lets you feel so ucky. He said, you like that feeling? Because that's what you'll have forever if you don't listen to me. Then he'll take you through a listening time where you pay more attention. And it's, what is he doing? He's disciplining us. He's giving us the rod a little bit. Sometimes we need the rod. How many understand? Just because we've been saved for a long time, we've been preaching the gospel for over 30 years, you don't think you don't need the rod? Still, sometimes you need the rod. And he'll give it to us to let us realize that you can blow all of it in just a second. So we have to be careful. We have to be disciplining ourselves to understand these principles of Jehovah. And so he says, for this Hagar is Mount Sinai of Arabia and corresponds to Jerusalem, which is and is in slavery with her children. Why is Jerusalem in slavery with her children? Because they have the Torah. They're still in slavery because they got to have this Redeemer come. This one who's going to be cut and bleed, which was the sign of the covenant to Abraham, was the circumcision. So what happens to the circumcision? So we don't have to be too graphic. Everybody understands. You take the foreskin and you pull it forward and cut. So, and then stuff bleeds. So you still have this cutting that took place here, but it was a seal of that promise. And then we told in the scripture that if a Gentile wanted to participate as an Israelite, they had to be circumcised. Under Torah, they had to be to take Pesach. But now, when Christ comes and gets cut for us, we have to have circumcision where? In the heart. Because where does he write the new covenant? In the heart. So we took it from flesh to spirit, just like that. Now we're dealing with the spiritual side of it. So at one time, it was written with the finger of God or the spirit of God. Finger and spirit are used interchangeably. One is spoken in Luke and the other one in Matthew, dealing with this finger of God or spirit of God. Used of the same story, Luke used his finger and Matthew used spirit for the same story. So they use interchangeably. So why does he do that? Because finger represents what? It represents the spirit, but other than that, it represents what? Flesh. Let me give this to you. Ishmael was born under Avram. Yitzhak was born under Abraham. Yitzhak wasn't born until his name was changed. So you got to remember that. Because why? They're patterns. They help us along the storyline. Ishmael was born under Avram, but Yitzhak was not born until his name was changed to Abraham. That right there ought to do something for you. That we see God progressive. He's progressive, actively working in Avram's life. He's not a finished product. We all know he's not finished. We all know he's got flaws. He makes mistakes. He goes in and sleeps with Sarah's servant girl. That's a mistake. But God said, I'm on work. He didn't throw him away. He didn't cast him out. He's working with him just like you and I. He's working with us. Now, we don't have to get in the habit of doing that. We're to learn our lesson along the way. And we see Abraham did that. He learned his lesson. He learned his lesson when he went down to Mitzrayim. He learned his lesson with this taking of this servant girl. But now we have an allegory he's telling us. And here's Shaul dealing with this subject. He's dealing with Genesis 16 in Galatians 4. So in the renewed writings, if the Torah is over with, why in the world is Shaul dealing with Genesis 16? It makes no sense to me. If you don't need it no more, why deal with it? It's over with. It's finished. It's done away with. Christ came and done away with it. Christ is everything. All you got to do is talk about Christ. You don't have to talk about none of this other stuff. Then why is Shaul talking about it? Why is Yaakov bringing it up? Why is Luke bringing it up in Acts? He's the writer of Acts. Why is he bringing it up? Why is Peter constantly bringing it up? What is the point of it? If it's over with, why keep bringing it into play? And not to mention, why did Yeshua constantly bring it into play? Because I can submit to you, it's not over. And that's false tales of traditions of men that made up religious ideas that became doctrinal truths to them. And so you have to actually leave the principles of the doctrine of Christ. You leave it, it's foreign to you to buy into some of these ideas. They're not going to help you. But the Jerusalem above is free, which is the mother of us all. The Jerusalem is free, which is the mother of us all. Now, this Jerusalem is free, the mother of us all, because it's talking about this promise seed. The Jerusalem is free, which is the mother of us all. This promise seed is what he's dealing with. He made the promise to Abraham by cutting the animals, laying them out, walks through the blood, and cuts the covenant. Now, remember, Avram in this case, he didn't walk through it. We see nowhere where he walked through it, but Yehovah did. Because it wasn't a sacrifice. It wasn't parties participating equally. What did God require of Avram was to believe what he said. Remember, Avram believed God, and it was counted to him for righteousness. He wasn't required to do anything. He wasn't required to do anything whatsoever as pertaining to this covenant that was made. So God looked around, because to have a covenant, it has to be between two people. So the party was between Yehovah and Avram, but God had to swear on this covenant. He could swear by no higher power. He swore by himself. See, does it make sense when you look at it that way? And so now the Jerusalem above is free. Above, what it says, Jerusalem is free. We're talking about the free woman, the one born of Sarah. This is what he's talking about when it says, but the Jerusalem above is free. We're talking about this free woman, the one born of her, that seed. Now we know that ultimately the seed of Yeshua is going to come down this long line of ancestors, this genealogy, and it's going to start with Isaac. With Isaac, it's going to start with him. Then he's going to have a son who's going to take that position. One gives up the position, the other falls into the position. And God still, again, takes that, works through that, and gets us to where we need to be. And then finally, Yaakov has 12 sons. And then one of those 12 sons is going to be the line in which Yeshua will come out of. So God is, when you're talking about God dealing with a subject, he deals it with it from the start to the finish, all in one setting. Us, we got to go through the time period, because we're subject to time. God's not. We're subject to time, so it's just like Abram was subject to time. 10 years, and God promised him he'd have a child. He didn't have a child. He revisits him again, because he knows he's getting discouraged. And then 13 years later, he comes along. And then you have to understand, Ishmael is born. Now Ishmael's 13 years old. He's 13. And then he tells Abram, he says, well, by this time next year, you're going to have Isaac. You're going to have Isaac. Ishmael's 13. So in his mind, Now I'm getting on Genesis 18. I'm trying not to. In his mind, he's thinking, I have a 13-year-old son. He's from me. This is part of it. And surely, God, you could go through Ishmael. He said, No. Is that what I said when I cut covenant? I said, your seed come from your own bowel. If that's the case, I'd have used Eliezer. We wouldn't have been through all this stuff. I just took him. He was already in your house. Remember, one who comes in the house of a Hebrew, even though it's considered a slave, is like a son. And they're treated like sons. Completely different than mentality of what we think of definition of slavery in our world. People read the Bible and they see these terms and they get all offended by the terms. The Bible is full of slavery. You have no idea how good it was. You could make one of Abram's 318 men on a bet leave Abraham and join somebody else. That's how close they was. That's how much they believed, because they were treated fair. They were treated good. Nobody's wanting to leave. And we know under the Torah, if the servant don't want to leave, you nail his ear with an awl to the door. If he don't want to leave, he don't have to leave. So what are they saying? He said, not only am I a good slave to you, I want to continue to live in this house, and I want to continue to be a part of it. And the woman you gave me, I want her to be my wife. And so they decide to stay. But there's a process in that doing, because it's taking them from, because they're free. They're able to go. You can leave. But you can't take the stuff that you got when you was here. And you start thinking, man, this is so good being here. I got a place to stay. I got all the food I want to eat. I got a beautiful family. I got livestock. You think I'm going to leave and take nothing? They ain't doing that. So many times they would just, they get an all run through the ear and say, I'm committed. And it's done at the door post. So everybody knows. Everybody sees. It's the place of entry. This becomes son. It's a son to me now. And so we call it adoption. And let me tell you, we get grafted in. We have to come. You can't enter the house unless you come to the door. And Yeshua said, I'm the door. We got to enter in at the door. And at the door, covenant's made at the door. Where did the Pesach lamb get slaughtered? At the door, at the threshing floor. It's called the you're making this, what's the covenant there? At the door? The threshold covenant. And so we have to come and have a threshold covenant. And once you do that, you're not going that way. You're going in the door. You're going inside. And now you're underneath the house rules. It's beautiful to me. Listen, none of this is hard when you want to. You got to ask God to get your want to right. I can't get your want to right. There ain't nothing I can do to preach you to get your want to right. You got to ask God to get your want to right. And without set apart spirit, you'll never want to. It's just that simple. Unless you humble yourself and begin to pray in the spirit, you'll never get your want to right, no matter. And I'll drive myself crazy trying to get you happy about doing what God wants you to do. And listen, I'm telling you up front, there's nothing I can do to help you get your want to right. You got to get the set apart spirit inside of you to give you the want to obey him. You want to. When you get your want to right, when you want to study, it's wonderful. When you fight it, it's miserable. You can fight it. You can do that however long you want. But you think God's going to change what he asked you to do? It's not going to change. For it has been written, rejoice, O barren, you who do not bear. Break forth and shout, you who do not have birth pains. For the deserted one has many more children than she who has a husband. Shaul here is repeating this Isaiah 54 count when it says, sing, O barren, because it looks like things are going good for you. It looks like, you know, you're talking about, I'm going to have all these promised children, but I don't even have the first one yet. I'm barren. Now understand, Sarai was barren of all children, not just male children. She didn't have female children. She didn't have any children at all. She was completely barren. She had no children, period. And we brothers, as Yitzhak was, are children of promise. Who are we? Children of promise. Are we children of the flesh? We were. We were. Go to Ephesians. I already see I'm going to have a little problems here. They're not bad problems, just to me. Ephesians 2. And you were dead, in trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the rulers of the authorities of the air, of the spirit that is now working in the sons of disobedience. That's what we were. But we're not that no more. Now that's children of the flesh. Among whom also we all once, everybody say once, lived in the lust of our flesh, doing the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, as also the rest. We were no different. Verse 4 is one of my favorite verses. But Elohim, who is rich in compassion, because of his great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in trespasses, made us alive together with Messiah. By favor you have been saved. Raised us up together, made us sit in the heavenlies in Messiah Yeshua, in order to show in the coming ages the exceeding riches of his favor and kindness toward us in Messiah Yeshua. For by favor you have been saved through belief, and that not of yourself, it is a gift of Elohim. It is not by works, so that no one should boast. For we are his workmanship, created in Messiah Yeshua unto good works. Let me see that. Unto good works, which Elohim prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. What do you think he prepared beforehand that we should walk in them? He prepared his instructions. He prepared his instructions that we should walk in them beforehand. I mean, thank God for that. So I thought I'd just throw Ephesians 2 in there just quick. Now go back to the 28th verse. And we, brother, as Isaac was, our children of promise. But as he who was born according to the flesh then persecuted him, born according to the spirit, so also now. And let me tell you, so also now. The moment you are born of the spirit, get ready, the one who's born of the flesh is going to persecute you now. Just what it is. It happened then, during Ishmael, in Isaac it happened. It happened during Paul's time, when he's writing to the Galatians, during Yeshua's time. And guess what is happening now? Because the moment you say, I'm going to start doing what God wants me to do, all of a sudden, that becomes a call to something. And they got to make it look like what you're doing is so bad that nobody else wants to do it. Yet it's the very thing God's saying. And the difficult thing is if you get caught underneath that pressure and you allow that pressure to get to you, you'll do the same thing to other people. You'll join the team of the flesh. The flesh is against the spirit, and the spirit is against the flesh. That's just what the scripture says. And so it's not going to get, if you think it's going to get better, it doesn't get better. Until Yeshua comes back, it's not going to get better. Only he can get it better. And it's got to be something miraculous that happens to wake and shake people up so they realize the error they're in. Only God, by favor and grace, can revert them back into the kingdom. Other than that, they're lost forever. But as he who was born according to the flesh then persecuted him born according to the spirit, so also now. But what does the scripture say? Now, when I use that term scripture here, what do you think he's talking about? Because we don't want to guess, right? We're going to let him tell us what scripture is. Let's see where he gets what he's about to say from. Cast out the female servant with her son, for the son of a female servant shall by no means be heir with the son of the free woman. So we see this in 21:10. We're not there yet. We're going to get there quick. We're going to get there. 18, 19, 20. We're getting there pretty quick in our reading. So why refer back to something that's done away with? It don't make sense to me. What is he doing? Is he trying to confuse you? He's not going to confuse you. The confusing part is when you don't let the context, the history of it tell you what it's saying, and you're trying to, by a presupposition that you already made your mind up, it's over with, it's done away with, because there ain't no way God expects me to obey him. Not after I receive Christ. I receive Christ no matter what I do. Christ fixed it all for me. And you can't expect me to obey him. And so that presupposition is brought in, and we knock out everything else that God says. Therefore, brothers, we are not children of the female servant, but of the free woman. If you're born again under Christ, you're born of the free woman, not of the female servant. Now, it seems like to me what Shaul is doing here is that he's saying the female servant is representative of the Torah as a whole. But is he saying that? Because you read it, and this is where you go, somebody asks you a question, you don't know how to answer it. So I would say, well, let's go to Romans 7. Let's go see what else Shaul said. Romans 7, verse 1. Or do you not know, brothers, for I speak to those knowing the Torah, that the Torah rules over a man as long as he lives. How does the Torah rule over a man as long as he lives? Because only death can take you from its rule. Other than that, it rules over you. So I read verse 1, but I can't continue until I read Matthew 5. Now, why is he saying that? Because he read Matthew 5, I'm sure. Shaul understood what Matthew 5 was saying. So let's see what Yeshua, the expert, the rabbi, the one that we follow, our Messiah, the one that teaches us what to do. Let's see what he says. In Matthew 5, verse 17, it says, do not think that I came to destroy the Torah or the prophets. Some translations take that word destroy and put abolish. I did not come to destroy, but to complete. This is what he's saying. Just, it's pretty simple. There's nothing trickery here. It's simple. For truly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away. He's saying that heaven and earth will pass away. Therefore, and we talk about this, and Revelation talks about a new heaven and a new earth. For the old ones passed away, and he had to make a new heaven, new earth. He said, until it passes away, one yoda, one tittlebush, by no means pass from the Torah till all be done. Not a smallest letter or the accent points shall pass from the Torah till all be done. Whoever then breaks one of the least of these commands, the least of the commands, and teaches men so shall be called least in the reign of the heavens. But whoever does and teaches them shall be called great in the reigns of the heavens. This basically, people ask me about this, this settles it for me. I don't have to go anywhere else. I just read what Yeshua said and it settles it for me. Because there's no ambiguity here. This is not saying something but not saying something. This is clear speaking terms. He says he didn't come to destroy the law of the prophets. Why is he saying that? The Torah of the prophets. Why is he saying that? Because he knew they would think that. They would think that. He's trying to warn ahead of time. Don't think that. Yet we think in that today. Are we paying attention to our leader? We claim him. We say this and we're doing this in his name, but we're really not. Because we don't take his name serious. Because the things he says not to do, we do. So this basically settles it for me, because he's saying, without ambiguity, clear as can be, he is saying, don't think that way because I didn't do that. He's going to bring it to its completion or to its fullness. He's not going to abolish it. It wouldn't make sense, would it? So, it's like When I was a kid, let me see if I can just share this real quick. When I was a kid, we'd be riding to town, and there was a service station we'd stop at over here in Empire, and you pull in, and the attendant comes out. And they'd do you, wipe your window, they'd get, open your hood, get a can. I remember that old can of oil, they'd shove the thing in, they'd check your oil and put a little oil in for you, and then they'd pump your fuel. You wouldn't do nothing, you're sitting there. So if you got there, you roll the window down, you tell the attendant, they say, how much do you need? You tell them $5 or $10. Or some would say, fill her up. So if Yeshua says he came to fulfill or fill her up, it don't mean he would disconnect. So if it means abolish, if he took a cutting pliers and cut your gas line because you said fill her up, meaning it was complete, and he cut the line, you're going to still have a little fuel what's left in the line, but you're not going to go far down the road. What he filled up, you won't have access to. If that's the meaning we put into this. If fill her up means do away with or cut away, and you're sitting in your car and he says, okay, if the attendant's, if he's not quite all there, because that's how you have to be, he would say, okay, fill up. I know what that means. It means cut the line. Cut him off from it. Fill her up means cut him off from it. Fulfill means to finish it. It means to bring it to its end. It's in. It's the end. So he cuts the line. You never go back to that station again. You say, okay, that dude's lost his mind. I said, fill her up. He cut the line. That's exactly, I know it sounds funny, but that's exactly what's happening with people today when they try to make the Word of God say something that it just plainly does not say. Yeshua said he wasn't bringing something to an end. He was bringing something to his fullest understanding. He was what it talked about the entire time, and now he's here. And it's sad that, to me, it's sad that the Judaizers didn't get it. But there was a reason they didn't get it. He said, they have eyes to see, but see not. Ears to hear, but hear not. He said, I've caused their eyes to, because they constantly went against what I told them to do. So I caused them to be in that position. And then the New Testament believers started out well, and then it gets a little tough, and then we start trying to make it easier for us, and we start cutting away and doing away with cutting the line, and now what he filled up, you don't even have access to it no more. Don't it make sense if you say fill her up, you have access to that full tank? But if he cuts the line, if it's the end, he cuts the line. You know, he fills it full, but he cuts the line. It don't make no sense. And that's exactly what's happening in the world today. We want the fullness of Yeshua, but we want to cut the line. We want the fullness on paper, but we don't want it, what it brings to us. What it brings to you is obedience. You get the want to do. Set apart spirit comes in, you automatically want to read. You want to study. You want to be in Shabbat service. But then you got to believe all those things. And when you don't believe those things, it's very difficult to be in those things. So you got to make something up to make that so wrong that you shouldn't do that. Have you fallen from grace? Are you crazy? To be keeping Shabbat? Have you fallen from grace? Keeping feast days, have you fallen from grace? Have you lost your mind? These are not make-believe terms. This is verbally spoken, at least to me all the time. So when I look at this, I see the beauty in what God has done for us, and I want to take Yeshua at his word. Don't think that way. Don't think on those terms. If you're thinking in any slightest way, you're in trouble. And he says, if you teach others to do so, you'll be least in the kingdom. I don't know what that exactly all means, being least, But it's not good. It's not great. He contrasts the two. One he calls least, the other he calls great. Now he'll have mercy on who he's going to have mercy on. It's not my pick. But you have to decide whether you want to be called great or called least. And so here in Romans 7, he says, for a marriage, he's going to explain it to us. A married woman has been bound by the Torah to a living husband. Why living? Because if he dies, she's not bound no more. So he's telling us she's bound by a living husband. That's why the word living's there. But if the husband dies, she is released from the Torah concerning her husband. Not concerning everything in the Torah, concerning her husband. Notice the wording here. This subject is talking about a woman bound to the Torah of a living husband. She's bound as long as she's alive. Just because he dies, she's released from her marriage to the husband, but not from the rest of the Torah. When they read this, it's this entire thing. They're released from everything. This again, seems to be allegorical to them. Did it say that? When it's allegory, does he not tell us? I'm telling you, he's dealing with facts here, not allegory. He's teaching us something about a subject that's straightforward. She's released from the Torah concerning her husband. So then, while her husband lives, she shall be called an adulteress if she becomes another man's. But if her husband dies, she is free from that part of the Torah. That part of the Torah. So that she is not an adulteress, having become another man's. So my brother, you also were put to death to the Torah through the body of Messiah. And that's the key verse right here. See, when Yeshua died, we were put to death to the Torah. But we got to finish reading. Put together what part of the Torah? Is he not talking about parts of the Torah? He's telling us, he's trying to keep us understanding that he deals with parts of the Torah, but not all of the Torah. Are we still dealing with parts of the Torah? I submit to you we are. And he gave us some indication about parts of the Torah, how he worded the first part. I know it's slightly in there, but it's in there. I saw it. I was like, okay, I see. I see. This is great. How many see it now? That I mention it. That I mention it, you're going to see it for the rest of your life. Because you see it now that he's dealing with the Torah in parts. So my brothers, you also were put under the death to the Torah through the body of Messiah. For you to become another's, the one who was raised from the dead, that we should bear fruit to Elohim. So we come under another's, which was raised from the dead. So he's still speaking of Messiah who was raised from the dead for us. For when we were in the flesh, now he's going to tell us about this flesh. Now, for we're in the flesh, which was a direct result from who? Hagar. Well, in the flesh, the passions of sin through the Torah were working in our members to bear fruit to death. So he's telling us right there what part of the Torah he's talking about. The part that says, if you do this, the curse part of it. And if you sin, then death is part of the curse of the Torah. So you can't subtract it out. It's part of it. And that's how Paul words it. He speaks of it in a general sense. But understand, this is wrote to the Rome in Rome. This is to an audience that was very familiar. If Shaul was saying what people say he's saying, they would have killed him on the spot in this letter. Because these people understood, they loved the Torah. It was their passion. They kept it for a long time. But now we haven't been released from the Torah, have died to what we were held by, so that we should serve in the newness of spirit and not in the oldness of letter. We're released from the curse of the Torah. Now the curse is in the Torah, so he used the word in a general sense, but then he tells us what part of the Torah he's talking about, the curse part of the Torah. But now we have been released from the Torah, having died to what we were held by, so that we should serve in the newness of spirit, not in the oldness of the letter. What then shall we say? Because he knows that people are going to take it the wrong way. He does just what the master does. Think not. What then shall we say? Is the Torah sin? That's the question. Because at this particular point, on all accounts, in a general sense of speaking of the Torah, if you don't understand that he's speaking of a part of the Torah, he asks in one broad stroke, is the Torah sin? What's the answer? Let it not be. Doesn't that sound familiar, Matthew 5? See how beautiful it is? However, I did not know sin except through the Torah, for also covetous I knew not if the Torah had not said, you shall not covet. So that part of the Torah he's dealing with at the beginning verses is that part that says, if you do this, you shall die. That part it will be free from on the Messiah. He's would read us from that part of it. The other part we're not free from. There's no suggestion that we're free from it. That's why he states this and he gets us back on track, because we run in the ditch. We were going good, man. We had it on cruise control. Then we nodded off and we run in the ditch. And you run in the ditch, you get yourself in trouble. Me and my wife was going to town one day, and I'm driving. I look over to my left on a southbound lane. I said, man, look at that car. They were in the ditch doing 70. The car looked like a movie set. He was jumping, grass flying, water flying, and he was coming to a big culvert under the road. I mean, almost to it, and he woke up. How do I know I woke up? I went over there and talked to him after we everybody got together. He kind of was spinning and spinning. Different car stop. I turned around and went back and I said, hey, I knocked on his door. He had his head down. I said, are you okay? He said, man, I fell asleep. Tired. I said, well, you can't drive your car no more. The radiator's leaking all over the road. You busted your radiator. But he was going good till he nodded off. And what happened? He wound up in the ditch. Sometimes you get yourself in a ditch, you got to pull yourself back in the road. You got to get it back in the middle of the road. Because we get off in a ditch with our thinking and our thoughts. And so if you read the text as a whole, it don't allow you to do that. It keeps you in the middle of the road. And Yeshua, he's the master. Who does it better than the master? He's teaching them and he says, okay, some of them just run off in the ditch. So he says, think not that I come to destroy the law of the prophets. He had to get them back in the road. Same thing with Shaul is doing here. Does that make sense to everybody? But sin, so now we know what he's talking about. What's the subject he's talking about now when it deals with the Torah? But sin. So he's telling us, just in case we fail to pick it up on our own as we were reading at the beginning, that we're talking about this fresh part of the Torah, or the one that was sold under sin. He's telling us as a fact. But sin, now he's got our attention. We're back in the road, and now we understand what the subjects he's talking about. Sin. Having taken the occasion through the command, did work in me all sorts of covetousness. Now, he wouldn't even know that if it wouldn't have been for the Torah. If God wouldn't have said, thou shalt not covet, he would have never knew that. So is the Torah bad to Shaul? It's bad if he's coveting, but if he's not, it's good to him. And so the bad part is what we've been redeemed from, because we were all under it. You understand? The oldness of the letter. We were under it. It was written against us. It was the ordinance written against us. We couldn't get out of it until we had somebody come and rescue us. We were captured by the kings. We were just like Lot. We needed somebody to come and rescue us. Somebody got to get me out of this trouble I'm in. I'm not getting out. And Yeshua came and got us out of that. But we have to understand the wording of this Romans 7 and how beautiful it is. I always ask God, I say, God, I'm struggling with this part. I read it, but I don't really see it the way you want me to see it. I just feel like I'm missing something. Would you open up my mind? Would you open up my understanding? God, let me embrace your word the way you are saying it to me. I don't want to read anything into it. I just want to trust you. I trust your spirit. I'm going to do whatever you want me to do with it. He's faithful. He's faithful to us. Now he says in verse, but sin having taken the occasion through the command did work in me all sorts of covetousness. For apart from Torah, sin is dead. He says something that really gets people. This next statement, verse 9. And I was alive apart from the Torah once, but when the command came, sin revived and I died. Well, you are alive apart from the Torah because you don't even know what sin is. How can you be judged by something you don't even know? If you're not told what's wrong and you do the wrong, you can't be judged by that wrong. You didn't even know it was wrong. You were just doing something. You had no idea what it was. But then once the Torah told you it was wrong and you did it, then you died. Absolutely true. So we all dead men walking. Do we need a Savior? You better believe we do. Do we need somebody to come and cut the pieces and the blood be shed for us? We do, because our blood can't do it. That's why you can't have circumcision do it for you. If you allow circumcision to do it for you, you can save yourself. That's why he's telling the people, circumcision don't avail. Uncircumcision don't avail, circumcision don't avail. None of it avails because you can't do it for yourself. You have to have somebody who come do it for you. You got to have circumcision in the heart. He takes it from a flesh, pure flesh level to a spiritual level. Everybody can be circumcised in the heart. And the way we do that, we start obeying the Torah. We start obeying what he said in circumcision. Because does it hurt? Do you get sore about it? Sometimes you leave here, I feel like you're a little sore at me. You might feel, am I ever going to get it right? Well, I don't know. We're working on it. So it seems like sometimes I don't want you to think, well, we can hit it on cruise and we're good to go. We got to constantly be growing in him because the adversary is constantly there and he's trying to take you out and I want you to be protected. Verse 10, and the command which was to result in life, this I found to result in death. He's telling us, I didn't like it. Matter of fact, I hated it. Because it constantly told me what I was doing was wrong when I was doing wrong. It let me know. If you missed Shabbat and he said, remember Shabbat, you automatically knew. It said to remember Shabbat to keep it set apart. And I didn't do it, so now you're going to feel that conviction. It's automatic. See, that's the part that Charles is dealing with right here. Watch, you can see his word. For sin having taken the occasion through the command, sin through the command, deceived me, and through it killed me. So that the Torah truly is set apart, and the command set apart, and righteous and good. Which one is it? It seems like he's saying the Torah is bad, but then he turns around and says, so that the Torah truly is set apart, and the command set apart, and righteous and good. He just got finished saying the command killed him, and now the command set apart. Which one is it? It's both of them. I'm trying to get you to understand, when he used the term Torah, you got to understand what part of it is he speaking on, and what part he's not speaking on. Because the term is a general term. The context tells us what if he's speaking on a part of it or not. Does that make sense to you now reading Hebrew? I know some of you went home and read Romans 7, and you probably left Romans 7 and 8 a little more confused than you started. Because it's challenging. Yet, we read it together, and God brings some clarity to our understanding because now we can... Now we can then turn around and share it with somebody else because now we see what he's saying. So that the Torah truly is set apart, the command is set apart, and righteous and good. Therefore, has that which is good become death to me? It's a great question. That which is good become death to me. Let it not be. Now it was death to him. What? That? Because it was a part of the Torah was death to him. What? The part he broke. If you don't break it, it's not death to you. It's good to you. It's righteous. So you see the difference? Once Yeshua comes and does circumcision for me, does the covenant of the cutting away, the blood is shed, and I walk in that covenant that he made, just like Abram had to walk in the covenant that Jehovah made for him. I walk in the covenant that Yeshua made. The Torah is good to me. And that's the part you got to, it's to get on that side of it. When you don't get on that side of it, because you're constantly butting heads with it, you're butting heads with leadership, you're butting heads with the teacher, you're butting heads with everybody, and before you know it, the very thing that you sort of saw and you said, yeah, this is it, now all of it's wrong. And you're back right where you started. It's a terrible place to be. And I'm trying to do my best to try to tell you that's not what he's saying here. And yet people go read Romans 7, they're free. They're free from the Torah. I'm free from the Torah. I'm so glad I'm free from the Torah. I don't do any of it. I mean, you can see how the devil tricked you. You've been tricked. Not once, but twice. You was tricked going in, and you was tricked going out. And that's sad that we, and the only thing we got to do is adhere to the principles of God and we won't be tricked. Therefore, has that which is good become death to me? Let it not be. But sin, that sin might be manifest, was working death in me through what is good. So that sin through the command might become an exceeding great sinner. The Torah allows you to see just how bad you are. It sees how bad your condition is. You know, you can have, you can go along and you can cut yourself. Say you cut, the other day I cut myself with the knife. I was cutting a cabbage. And I was going down in the cabbage and I cut it in half. And then I got my hand like that and I took the cord and I was cutting it in half and I forgot to remove my finger. But I looked at my injury and I realized I didn't need to go to the doctor. It was going to heal on its own. But if I had cut my finger off, which I could have, it would have changed everything. I'd have looked at my situation and realized I need some help. I need emergency help. If I'd have cut the tip of my finger off, I'd have had to go to the emergency room. Well, that's what the Torah does. It shows you what help you need. Some people, they don't want no part of it. They need an emergency room. Some of you, it's just little things that you're working on. Well, he's not going to send you to the emergency room. He's going to help you get through it on your own. And so this is what Shaul is dealing with. He says, therefore, has that which is good become death to me? Let it not be. But sin, that sin might be manifest, was working death in me through what is good, so that sin through the command might become an exceeding great sin. For we know that the Torah is spiritual. Let me see that. It's spiritual. But I am fleshly sold under sin. For what I work, I know not. For what I wish, that I do practice. But what I hate, that I do. Now this sounds a bit confusing with Paul the way he writes. But Peter tells us this, he writes confusion sometimes. It's crazy. It's hard to understand. Which one is it? You know, you get finished with this, you're about tongue-tied. But if I do what I do not wish, I agree with the Torah that it is good. And now it is no longer I that work it, but the sin dwelling in me. For I know that in me, that is in my, what? Flesh. Everybody say flesh. Under the slave girl, the flesh. We have this allegory. Remember that. We're still dealing with Romans 7. We have this allegory. He said, in my flesh dwells no good. So we know automatically that there's no good in the flesh. It needs help. For to wish is present with me, but to work the good I do not find. How many see that? He's telling the condition of man outside of God coming to assist us. Your condition is just in trouble. You have no help, no hope. For the good that I wish to do, I do not do. But the evil I do not wish to do, this I practice. So he's trying to tell us that we have this evil inclination. We have this frightening darkness that's just like it was there when Jehovah was there himself. It was there. Now, it wasn't bothering Jehovah because it knows better. But it was bothering Avram because it knew it can get to him because he's in the flesh. He's dealing with flesh every day, just like you're dealing with flesh. So, you know, the attack don't come when you're together at Shabbat. It comes when you get home. It comes when you're by yourself on the job or when you find yourself alone in the woods or whatever it is. It comes, but you got to practice how to engage God through prayer and praise. You have to. It's got to be a habit to you. This can't be something you do when it's an emergency to you. If you're praying only to get yourself out of a bind, you're not praying near enough. I'm talking about praying on purpose because you love God. I'm talking about engaging heaven because he's that awesome. He's that good. You tell him how good he is. You're not asking him for anything. You want to just give him a lot of praise and adoration and thanksgiving. You got to make those connections. Why? Because the moment you stop doing it, that frightening darkness is all around. It's trying to take you out. It don't want you to have this help. It don't want you to have this hope. And so this is why we see him using this terminology. And if I do that which I do not wish, it is no longer I who works it, but sin dwelling in me. So what gives in to the evil inclination? Sin. So once sin starts, it's like snowball rolling down the hill. It starts and then it's just small, and then before you know, if you don't stop it, it's going to be this thing that you can't handle down the hill. You'll be in trouble. So what happens when you sin? You have an advocate with the Father. You know that. You read that. You have an advocate with the Father. He's faithful and just to forgive you and cleanse you of all unrighteousness. Use it. That's why we have to engage in the Word of God and learn some of the Scriptures so we know how to fight it off. Because just like Shaul said, listen, this is what I'm up against every day. He's telling us what he's up against. And so you have to realize what Christ has done for you, he's given access to you. You got now real-time access into the throne room if you use it. And so, but you have to tap in it in the spirit. The flesh don't want nothing to do with it. You're not coming here because your flesh is all excited and pumped up. It wants to stay home because it's raining a little bit. And it's a little chilly. You know, let's just stay home and put our jammies on and just kick back and relax. That's what my flesh wanted to do. And I'm tired. Yeah, after a week of duck hunting, I'm tired. Let me tell you, it would be so easy. But you got to fight that, and you got to say, you know what, God, I'm asking you. I'm asking you to energize me in the spirit realm. I can't come do this in the flesh. If I'd done this in the flesh, you wouldn't get half of what I'm saying. I'd be mumbling. But you got to do it in the spirit. You got to let the set-apart spirit come upon you, anoint you to deliver the message, and he'll bring the words. They're there. They're in you, but you got to have faith to believe God and trust him that he's not going to leave you hanging. He won't. But fear comes. And when it comes, you got to deal with it. So he's trying to show you that part of the fear, you got to overcome it still. Because that's the part when you want to do, you know what to do is right. When you try to do it, it's hard for you to do. You have to overcome that. I find therefore this law that when I wish to do good, that evil is present with me. That's a reality. Well, it's not nothing new. Do you think this is new to the New Testament church? That's not new. What was present with Avram when Jehovah was there with him? What was present? We're told that. But we didn't read that near slow enough to pick that up. Thank God that we took some time this year to go verse by verse because we needed to know that, because now we see what we're dealing with every day. If you think you got it scot-free, you're good, you don't have to worry about anything, you have to make sure that you're on your game every day or the enemy will come and take you out. A frightening dark spirit was by Avram. When God was performing one of the most fascinating promises and oaths that he'd ever made before, and it was there. Same thing with you. It's not you. You've been beating yourself up for years because you can't get it together. Listen, we already know that. That's a gimme. We can't do it without his help. But it's not been you. It's been that evil inclination that it's got to be subject to the things of God. And you can't subject something that's evil to the things of God if you don't know the things of God. You got to get familiar with what God likes and what he dislikes. I delight in the Torah. Now, why is he delighting in something that he's speaking against? Don't make sense to me. For I delight in the Torah of Elohim according to the inward man. But I see another Torah, little t Torah, in my members, battling against the Torah of my mind and bringing me into captivity to the Torah of sin, which is in my members. That part of the Torah, he's showing us that he's splitting out parts of the Torah, the part that deals with the penalty of disobeying. Because that's part of the Torah. Did he not say, go to Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal? He said, I want you to declare the blessings on this mountain and declare the curses. It's not the cursed part of the Torah. See, it's the part we don't want to deal with, but you got to deal with it. Because we're subject to it as long as it's there. Now, we know that when Christ come and died for us, what happened to what we were subject to? It died. It died. But if that was everything there was to it, then there'd be no reason for us to do anything. You wouldn't even have to go to church. It's a one-time fix all. But you know what? You got to pull up to that station again and say, fill her up. And fill her up don't mean cut the gas line. Fill her up. I need to be filled up. So what do? Every week we come and say, fill her up. And so I hope that I'm getting the needle moving anyway tonight. I delight in the Torah of Elohim according to the inward man. I see another Torah in my members, little t-Torah, battling against the little t-Torah of my mind and bringing me into captivity to the little t-Torah of sin which is in my members. Wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death? He's telling us he's frustrated about what's happening. Yeah, I've been frustrated before. Why did I do it again? That's how he felt. You get frustrated over it because it don't make sense. Because that's what you're dealing with. Every now and then you got to be reminded you're still dealing with it. Don't let your guard down because he really wants to take you out. He said, I got grace to get you over these faults, these little falters. I can get you over that. But it's going to be hard to get you out if you go full into it. He said it'd be tough to get you out of that. Wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death? Thanks to Elohim, through Yeshua Messiah, our master. So then, with the mind, I myself truly serve the Torah of Elohim, but with the flesh, the Torah of sin, little t-Torah. Can you see in that beautiful chapter of Romans 7, he tells us when he speaks of Torah, he's speaking of parts of the Torah that it becomes a curse to us. And it gets better. Let me tell you, it gets better. If I went to Galatians 3 now, you'd see the beauty of it, but I got to wait till I read Genesis 18. And I ain't even done 17 yet. So the goal, and I got a Romans 8 still to do, and I'm out of time. So maybe I'll start out in the morning in Romans 8, and then it looks like we're going to be two more, at least tomorrow and another Shabbat finishing this Torah portion. But we don't want to rush it. We're going good in it. We don't want to rush it. And how many thank God I did Romans 8 and finished Galatians 4 tonight? It's important to our life, but you have to see it when you're reading it. See, it's telling us something. Sometimes we don't see what it's telling us. When he talks about the Torah in general, it seems like Shaul is saying something against the Torah in general, but he's not. He's talking about parts of the Torah that we're not under anymore simply because it's the curse of the Torah. But when you're speaking of it in the general term, that is part of it. So he says it in a way that seems that he's speaking of all of it, and he knew people would take it that way. So what he does, right in the middle, he said, don't think that way, just like Yeshua. Because I know I'm talking this way, you start to thinking, you got yourself in a ditch, bringing it back on the road. And it gets us squared away. So we see the beauty of it. So in the morning, I'll start on Romans 8, and then I'll read Galatians 3, and then I will read 17th chapter of Genesis. So that's a lot. Just that alone is a lot. So, and if I think you've seen by now, I added some slides to the overall, because in my mind, I thought I was finished. Well, I'm always finished in my mind. Then I read it again, And so I got home this evening. I got home pretty early. And I said, I'm going to be fine. Because when I get home and my body relaxes, I'm out. So what I did, I fixed something to eat. And I said, I'm just going to lay here a little while. Lay my head back. And I was quite a bit of pain. I couldn't get comfortable. I tried laying down, sitting down, leaning on my side. I couldn't get rid of pain. And I said, so it was interfering with me reading through what I wanted to read through for the night. So I said, I'm going to go do it. Get soaked in a tub and maybe it'll relieve the pain. And so it did. And while I was soaking in the tub, I put my reading there, and I just kept tapping it like that. And I read through all the slides again pertaining to this particular subject, so the latter part of it. And I'd already, leading up to that, while I was waiting on my stuff to be done, was when I put the rest of the slides in. And so I read through it, and I said, man, I'm good to go. Felt good about it. But I felt good this morning. Going out, I felt good about it. But I thought, I have enough already to talk about. I'll take care of two services, no problem. And then I get home and start reading, and I said, I missed this right here. This needs to be there. And this needs to be there. And this needs to be there. And this needs to be there. There's so much that you could read that's connected to what I barely touched the surface tonight, dealing with how Shaul talks about things in an direct way, but he means an indirect application, because he talks about the Torah in a direct overall, but his application is only part of it. And so that's why he had to come back and repeat himself. I'm not talking about all of it. I'm not talking about getting rid of it. I'm talking about just the part that's going to affect your life forever, and that's the part that you curse, the curse of it. And so we see that, and I'm thankful for his word. I appreciate the time he's given us.